What did happen? Okay. See, we did crash. It was on this crazy island. And we waited for rescue, and there wasn't a rescue. And then there was a smoke monster. And then there were other people on the island. We called them the others. And they started attacking us. And we found some hatches, and there was a button you had to push every 180 minutes or... Well, I was never really clear on that. But the others didn't have anything to do with the hatches. That was the Darmans. They were all dead. The others killed them. And now they're trying to kill us. And then we teamed up with the others because some worse people were coming on a freighter. Desmond's girlfriend's father sent them to kill us. So we stole their helicopter and we flew it to their freighter, but it blew up. And we couldn't go back to the island because it disappeared. So then we crashed in the ocean and we floated there for a while until a boat came and picked us up. And by then there were six of us. That part was true.
I came on a plane.
What plane?
A Jira Flight 316. And that's how I returned to the island.
So, why him?
What was it that was so wrong with me? What about me?
What about you?
Hello and welcome to The Storm, a Lost Rewatch podcast for Season 6, Episode 5, Lighthouse. Very important question at the beginning of this week. What instrument do you wish you were a virtuoso at? My name is Dave Gonzalez, and I'm picking the classic violin a little bit for the Sherlock Holmes, but also because when I decided I wanted to play violin in the fourth grade, the music teacher at the time told me my fingers were too weak to do it, and I never went back and tried it again. So screw you, music teacher.
Did they say you didn't have what it takes?
I didn't have what it takes in the finger department.
All right. My name is Joanna Robinson. And if I were a virtuoso at one instrument, it would be the ukulele, an instrument I know how to play very badly, but an instrument I would love to be able to play very well.
And I'm Neil Miller. And I think, you know, I really would love to be a virtuoso at a good, like, party instrument. But I would never want to be the guitar guy at a party.
You don't want to be Charlie Pace? Anyway, here's Wonderwall.
And here's Neil Miller. Oh, he has like five mouth harps in his pocket right now.
So I'm thinking electric keyboard / piano. More of like a, you know, like a Craig Robinson or like Gene Belcher from Bob's Burgers vibe, where yes. You could just bust out the electric keyboard at any time and lead some sort of drunken sing-along.
Charlie from Always Sunny, sort of like, yeah. Oh, he could play the keyboard.
Yeah, I that would be a very fun, surprising talent to have.
Excellent choice, Neil, in this episode about a secret pianist. Mm-hmm. We will get to that and more Lost. If this is your first time joining us, welcome. The podcast is an ideal companion if you're rewatching the ABC series Lost with us or visiting the island and flashing sideways for the very first time, because each episode comes in sections for your listening pleasure. First, there's a calm section that only discusses the preceding episodes and avoids all spoilers. And then there's a second section that is slowly diminishing, called The Storm, because it's a storm of spoilers discussing this week's episode in the context of the entire series. And over a decade of Lost fandom at this point, there aren't many episodes left that we know about that you guys haven't watched if this is your first time through Lost. So look down at your podcasting device and you will see time codes about when the calm starts, when the storm starts. If you want to skip around, if you want to revisit, those are there for you. For the final season of Lost, we've shifted to releasing the podcast on Saturday evenings in the U.S. after our group live watch in our Storm Slack. How do you join the live watches with us, you ask? You go to patreon.com/stormofspoilers. There, you will find ways to subscribe to us for a monthly fee, and depending on what level you choose, you get more and more bonus content. And here's something that just occurred to me the other day when I went back through our old bonus content. But if you subscribe for the first time, if you are not a Patreon subscriber currently, you get instant access to our previous years of bonus content, which include extra interview bits, bonus podcasts, and various oddities, like videos from me when I was in high school. There's even bonus podcasts that come with a watch-along element, like Feels Like the First Time, What's that, Joanna?
Hi-oh. Feels Like the First Time is a show that I do with Chris and Russo, our pal from the Buffering Podcast. It's a crossover event where we pick something, we pick a theme or a franchise. It's getting a little more and more esoteric, right? This last month we did Keanu Reeves movies, had a great time with The Matrix, Point Break, and John Wick. And for June we decided, we've already mapped out July for like several months now. We knew we were going to do Angelina July. So that's what we're doing. We haven't picked the movies yet, but we will be doing Angelina Jolie movies in July. But we came up with a great, inspired by our Keanu movies, we came up with a great trilogy of movies to watch in June. It is Pride Month. We are doing something that we are calling Drag Race, which means we are watching Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, Two Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything, Julie Newmar, and Kinky Boots. So three drag queen movies with modes of transportation, if you count boots as modes of transportation. So that is what we are doing. You can see Agent Smith himself, Hugo Weaving, in Priscilla. Great stuff. John Leguizamo, who's from John Wick, is in Two Wong Fu. And there was a third one. Swayze, of course, is also, who was in Point Break, is also in Two Wong Fu. So,
that is such a good movie.
Yeah. I mean, Two Wong Fu is great. I love Priscilla even more. That's like one of my favorite movies from the 90s. So we are going to be watching all of that and discussing sort of, you know, maybe some distances we have come since the 90s in terms of our understanding and portrayal of drag queens. So that's something I think is going to be really fun. So that is something that we are doing, which you can hear all about in our special bonus episodes. Okay, so there's that. You can always, of course, email us, leave reviews for us, follow us on Twitter at Storm Podcast. This is all stuff we really appreciate. I'm going to hit, we do have one new review. It's from Erin. And she's from Philly, and she asked me to read this in the Delco accent of Mayor of Easttown.
Is Erin okay? I've been very worried about her for 7 weeks.
That's a lie. You just watched the show this last week.
I've been very worried about her for 48 hours.
Do you need to take a sip of water first?
Yeah, I need to crack open a hoogie. Did I do it? I don't know. Anyway, 5 stars, never tighten up, is what this review is called. Longtime listener from the Game of Thrones Day and a Patreon subscriber, and I finally downloaded the Apple Podcast app just to leave a review when I saw the and discourse heating up. Please never change the way you speak, Joanna. You're my favorite podcaster, and it's actually a huge pet peeve when hosts on other podcasts refuse to use filler words. The moment of dead air from a short pause while they collect their thoughts always makes my heart skip a beat, and I think that I'm getting a phone call, and it's my boss, or daycare, or some other urgent issue. Love the podcast overall. Lost holds a special place in my heart, and you all started the Lost rewatch when I was pregnant with my daughter. I did my rewatch on maternity leave with my first-time watcher husband during our long sleepless nights. Now when I listen to the podcast, I always think back to that time, remember holding my little newborn and just being content. I'm also brought back to all the complaining we did about how baby Erin was the most unrealistic portrayal of a newborn in history, and how Claire was far too spry and agile for someone so pregnant, and then someone who had just given birth. Now I'm pregnant again, and I can't wait to see what you do after Lost so I can follow you three during my next maternity leave. So Erin is alive and well and with child.
Making new people.
New DJs. Very productive.
So thank you, Erin, for that email. And then we also a review, and then we also have a couple emails. We've got a quick one from Ryan, who this is about last week's episode, The Substitute. Ryan writes in, one of the neat features of The Substitute is an exploration of duality. In The Flash Sideways, we have John Locke as a substitute teacher, and on the island, John Locke has to be substituted by the Man in Black. This leads me to believe the person John Locke is subbing for is none other than Man in Black, a bit of poetic justice, Ryan Awol. So he thinks that the absent teacher at the high school will be played by Titus Welliver. I mean, I'm not mad about it.
Yeah. This week's episode lends some more credence to that as we see Dogen.
It's true.
Somewhere else.
It's true. All right. And then this one is from Lawrence. It's a little long, but I'm going to read it anyway. It says, Lost Virgin broken in by three fine humans. First of all, thanks for the hours of listening pleasure you've given me in 2021. I need to write this mail before you finish your Lost rewatch in the hope that you read it out on the podcast, knowing that I won't hear it for another couple months, and here's why. I only discovered Lost in 2021. I found this podcast when I was rewatching Game of Thrones, and when it turned into a Lost rewatch, I stopped listening because I had never seen the show. I'll come back to that. Then it turned up on Disney Plus, so I thought I'd give it a go. That's a European fact for you all going, why is it on my Disney Plus? after watching the first couple episodes, I started listening to you guys again, and now I'm like, why didn't I just watch Lost the first time around? I just listened to the season 3 finale podcast where you pose the feels like the first time question to the commies like myself. What you knew about Lost before you started rewatching. Remember that? It was way back in October 2020. I can honestly say, aside from a plane crashing on an island, I knew absolutely nothing. No character names, no plot, no themes, no cliffhanger moments, nada. The only cast member I recognized was Evangeline Lilly from Ant-Man. Oh, and a few cameos from the likes of Katie Seagal and Julie Bowen, etc. Back in 2004, I just moved to Amsterdam from the UK, dating my now wife and mother of my 4 children. I was clearly having way too much fun and totally missed Lost. Weird, right? So can you imagine I am only now getting into the whole Jungle of Mystery extravaganza? One of my favorite lines, in fact, most of Sawyer's lines, especially the inappropriate nicknames. Anyway, I love listening to you guys, breaking it all down, going through all the theories at the time, the insights, the guests, separating the calm from the storm. I listen to the storm for fun, but don't understand half of it, making the whole experience more enjoyable and getting me up to speed on what is a great show. I just left you a review on iTunes as a Brit in the Netherlands as well. I'm now halfway through and looking forward to getting to what feels like the business end of the show. Now that I know who said we have to go back in the intro, that was bugging me because I thought I missed it. However, the whole smoke monster, Jacob, Man in Black stuff is still a complete mystery at the moment, and I'm looking forward to you guys talking me through it. If you want to ask me any questions for entertainment value, then please feel free. Finally, I hope you like my little story of how I got into Lost, and I'll let you know when I'm done and whether I am as disappointed by the end as I am expecting to be. Loving your work, Lawrence, a British fan living in the Netherlands. All right, so that's
I'm rooting for Lawrence to like the ending.
Me too. I'm rooting for everyone listening to this podcast to like the end. That's like kind of, I mean, it's okay if you don't, but sure. Like, it's kind of our hope.
In terms of feedback we've gotten to this podcast, which thank you for like emailing, reviewing, using our Slack, all sorts of that, it seems like everyone's latching on to the moments that are going to lead them to success.
Yeah, except for Dave.
In this finale.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, that gives away that we're going to end at Sawyer and Kate's wedding. So thanks for doing that. But
all right. So those are, I'm sorry, what else were you going to say, Dave?
No. I was going to continue to yes and you, but go ahead.
So we are, that is it for my section. When you're listening to this, which will be on a Saturday, the following Saturday, we will be watching the episode Sundown in our Patreon Slack with our producer, Diana. So you could check that out. You might think you know who the central character of Sundown is, but you would be wrong. And so until that mystery is solved, Neil Miller, what happened on Lost this week?
Oh, we took a little walk through the jungle this week. Lighthouse, this episode, was written by Carlton Cuse and Damon Lindelof, and directed by Jack Bender. It aired on February 23rd, 2010, and it takes place on days 6 and probably 7 following the arrival of Ajira Flight 316 on the island. On said island, Claire takes Jin back to her humble jungle abode where he meets her quote-unquote baby and experiences firsthand what 3 years alone in the jungle can do to a person. Doesn't exactly go well, especially for Justin the Other, but Jin does finally break the news to Feral Claire that it wasn't the others who took her baby, it was Kate. We'll come back to that. At the temple, Hurley receives another mission from Ghost Jacob, and according to the dead god, Hurley and Jack must leave the temple and head out into the jungle. After a brief meeting with Kate and a stop back at the caves, remember the caves? They make it to the mysterious lighthouse. At the top of the titular lighthouse, they discover that Jacob has a magic mirror device that allows him to watch them off-island. And because he's big on privacy settings, Jack smashes the mirrors almost immediately. Eventually, Jacob shows up and is pretty chill about the whole mirror thing, and as it turns out, he really just needed Jack and Hurley to get away from the temple, because something bad is about to happen there, because someone bad is on their way. Elsewhere in the Flash sideways, as Jack continues to deal with the fallout from his father's death and the missing casket, he also struggles to communicate with his son, David. And after learning that his son is secretly an amazing pianist, who's about to get into a prestigious conservatory, Jack gives what can only be described as a good dad speech, and they go home for some pizza. The whole thing ends back at Claire's hut, where Jin, in an effort to keep Claire from doing anything reckless and get her back to the temple, walks back the whole story about Kate, and is like, yeah, no, totally, the others took your baby. But before they can leave to go rescue Aaron from the others, Claire's mystery friend shows up, and guess what? It's fake Locke.
That's a dumb.
Fun fact about this. Yeah, I know. Pause for dramatic effect. Fun fact about this episode, Damon Lindelof's mother, Susan Klausner, appears in a non-speaking role as one of the judges at David's recital performance. I guess it's more of like an entry exam performance, right?
He's all trying to get into it. All candidates welcome.
Yeah, audition? He's a candidate. Mm-hmm. Yeah, audition would be a good word. This week's column question, where would you rather spend 3 years alone on the island? I'm going to give you three options. You can either stay in Rousseau's bunker, in Claire's hut, or at the caves with Adam and Eve. Let's start this week with Dave. Where are you spending 3 years alone?
I'm taking the caves, okay. Not necessarily because of the dead bodies, but if you recall, Michael made showers in there. There's showers in there.
Did he ever make the showers?
Yeah, yeah.
Or was he just drawing up plans for the showers?
I thought they were taking showers like in the waterfall sort of thing.
No, sure. He made like a bamboo pipe like elevated thing. I swear that we saw it at some point. but I'm going to say either way, the caves, water, first of all, possible showers, second of all.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. Joanna, are you
going
to...
I'm going with Rousseau's bunker. Because, listen, mm-hmm. that lady stayed safe for a very long time. Mm-hmm. Claire's garbage yurt looks like it smells really bad. So I don't want to live in the trash yurt. And it has no cover come rain. So, no. Claire's house is trash. The caves have skeletons in them. Mm-hmm. And bad memories of Boone. Sure. So I'm gonna go with the bunker.
Maybe still a bunch of Boone's blood on the floor of the cave.
Yeah, it's hard to get out.
Yeah, no, I think Dave makes a good point about the fresh water situation of the caves. That's very important. But I think I would also take Rousseau's bunker. Although I would be worried, especially knowing what we know now, that I would accidentally set off the big defense system that made the whole thing explode.
Mm-hmm.
So... like, I'm, you know, like, right now, I'm terrified of, like, knocking stuff over in the cluttered new house that we just moved into, and it's, like, got, like, boxes and stuff, so, like, I don't know if my anxiety would survive Rousseau's bunker, but
you
it's
could knock over wherever you
place.
Want in Claire's hut.
Sure, yeah.
Nah, there's dynamite in Claire's hut.
Oh, I guess you're right.
Also, right. Don't knock over the crib, or
I'll
else
just be knocking over skeletons.
The
then I'll be the cave klutz, and then be free to knock over anything. But then that's probably also where people will initially come, and you know, I guess if this is a place where I'm spending 3 years alone, I'm going with the running water. If I have to live on the island for 3 years, where there's a smoke monster that could take the form of dead people who is in some sort of battle for my soul, maybe. Then maybe I'm more bunkering up, because that mm-hmm. seems to be what we're at here.
It's actually a good argument for like why you would hang out at the temple, right?
The first good argument on why you would hang out at the temple.
The first and maybe only good argument
is you seem to be maybe safe from the soul gentleman, but maybe not. The way that Jacob ends this episode, it seems like they might not be safe. But yeah.
Or you just got to make friends with the smoke monster.
Yes, that's true. That is possible. And I guess maybe let's see if we could connect what we know about what happened to Saeed to what we've now seen with Claire. Where with Saeed, it was sort of like there's an infection, and if it reaches his heart, he will be claimed. And that is, according to Dogen, what has happened to Claire. But Claire's version of events is she made a new friend, who's this guy here. And she can now recognize the smoke monster in his flock form for what he really is. Which, I guess, raises some questions of, like, he must have been being Locke ever since the Locke's body got returned on the Ajira flight.
Mm-hmm.
So she's already seen him a couple of times as Locke and has not been surprised by it, I'd assume. Or when, she's just like has some sort of claimed sight and just sees it.
So I guess this sort of confirms for us that the smoke monster was, or the man in black was impersonating, I guess would be the best way to do it, Christian Shepherd in the cabin, at least, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's and, or does Kate say my grandfather and my friend? Or my father and my friend? I'm going to look this up real quick. You keep going.
Yeah.
She says, at
what point do you think...
She said, first my father, then my friend.
So there might still be a dry Christian Shepherd.
Yeah.
Because
I found that very
up-
interesting because I had always assumed that that was the smoke monster.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that Claire's the best source of intel here, but according to Claire, those seem like two different entities.
Yeah. Yeah. We also see that Claire had gone through a similar torture situation as what we saw Saeed get.
Needles and brands.
In the temple.
Needles
Very
and brands.
Skeptical of the temple others. They are just have no chill whatsoever, apparently.
Claire says, how can I be so sure? Well, first my father told me, then my friend told me, so I'm pretty darn damn sure.
Mm.
So.
Interesting.
You know?
So that, yeah, that seems, well, I guess.
You're still Joanna, my friend, aren't you, Jin?
if the friend told her that the others have the baby, that seems like a straight up lie
That's a lie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Settling our debate.
Mm-hmm, we've had this debate in the Calm and the Storm whether Smokey can lie. But if Smokey Locke told Claire that the others had her baby, when we all know that Aaron is chilling in Hawaii that is supposed to be Los Angeles with Claire's mom, provided she walked down the hallway to his hotel room,
right.
then he's a liar. A liar, Smokey is.
He's still with the orca. Yes.
My orca?
My orca. Aaron's orca. So let's stick around with Claire because I think Jack is, you know, helps to have both sides of Jack Island and Sideways, I think, together. Claire has been living around various places, making huts to avoid apparently getting captured by the others while also trying to get her baby back.
I don't want to judge Claire because she's been through a lot, but I admire her foundational yurt work, right? Like that's a good structure. But then I don't know why she went with like ratty flannels for cover when like she knows where there's the mother load of tarps and it's down at the beach, so
that's right.
That's how you know Claire has changed. She's forsaken all tarps.
I also have questions about her hair. Okay, so like they're trying to tell us that this is like 3 years in the jungle hair, but here's what we know, and obviously of course when we talked about this last week, they're trying to give her Russo vibes, right? But like what I don't understand is how Claire 3 years feral in the jungle, not a wet wipe to be seen for her skin, is still cutting her own bangs. She's still making sure that she has a cute fringe, no matter how matted and greasy it might be. So just want to shout that out. It's evidence of self-care, which is like her holding onto some shreds of like her former self, you know?
Right. Like cutting her own bangs is still good. But apparently rinsing her hair off in the river that it's probably not far away.
It's not happening for Claire.
it's not happening. But I will say this about Emily DeRaven. We've been giving her a little bit of a hard time, and because, you know, has been a sort of a weak link in the cast. But there is some fun stuff in this episode, where she's got a little bit of like shark-like evil Claire, scary vibes going on. And I think that this is, you know, this is pretty good. You know, Jin is right to be nervous around this version of Claire because she's got an axe. And
did you guys
she
feel
knows
like
exactly
in,
how to use it.
In the post, like, Walking Dead era of television, Claire would have, like, chopped off one of his legs first in, like, a new Lost. Instead of being like, and now it's your turn, she just would have, like, turned and chopped his leg off, and then we would have cut to commercial. Because I feel like television's made me expect ultra-violence mm-hmm. in moments.
I'm not convinced that she sharpened that axe enough. I'm not. I mean, I do love the juxtaposition of her boiling the surgical instruments to use on Jin because he's still mm-hmm. her friend. Love. I mean, Daniel Day Kim in this episode is freaking great as Jin tries to not die, but also keep this other guy alive. But that's less important than he himself not dying. And then she just like plunges a rusty axe into old Justin's thorax, sternum. Mm-hmm. I don't know where that was, but yeah. Wasn't good.
Yeah, it kills him almost immediately, which I'm not sure that would do.
I mean, he was already poorly.
Tough break for Justin. He really did try to be helpful.
Kind
like
of.
Like, he saved Kate in the last episode. He did threaten to kill Claire, though.
Yeah.
Like, if she untied him, he was going to do some bad stuff.
Yeah,
but,
and also, like, he was gaslighting her about her experience at the temple. Like, it's true that they don't have Aaron, right? But wasn't he, mm-hmm. wasn't she was like, they tortured me? And he's like, she's crazy. And we were like, wait, but we just saw you tortured Saeed. So we're pretty sure Claire may not have all of her facts together. But I think in this case, she's right. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to like Claire, well, Jin in his time traveling capability to just be put in a situation and make it work. Successfully survives this encounter, but then remind me, this is Jin's first time seeing Flock, right?
Yeah, because he's mm-hmm. like John, you know, mm-hmm. and then she's like, "That's not John, silly. That's my friend." sorry, Australia.
Which honestly, how's Jin even supposed to believe that, right? Like.
Jin's like, I'll wait until I hear this from someone else.
He's like, yeah, maybe I should get another source on this before I believe anything Claire says, because she's got a squirrel baby.
Well, and also, like, John's just, Flock's just standing there smiling at him like everything's normal. Like, Jin's got to be like, man, I haven't mm-hmm. seen you for, like, 3 years. And things are really weird last time I saw you, and you seem like, this seems like it's normal.
Yeah, and I think Jin, you know, he spent enough time with our other survivors who came back to the island to know, like, he probably thought that John was dead. So this, you know, big moment for Jin, big awakening.
I guess if they'd filled him in with Kate and Aaron, he then also knows about
mm-hmm.
about Locke.
I was trying to figure out when he heard, but like, I guess when they were hanging out the Dharma Initiative, question mark. I was like, when did Jin hear the story of Kate and Aaron?
Mm-hmm. You
know? Like a scene
during one of like the dinner parties that they were having while they were chilling in the 70s.
Yeah, Juliet's just pouring everyone some Dharma Sauv Blanc, and they're having a nice chat. What have you been up to? Mm-hmm. Oh, I've just been raising Aaron. It's fine.
I've come back to find Claire, but now it's the 70s, so you know I'll get to it.
Yeah, the reason I think Jin is a really good person to be paired with Claire here, though, is because she's not interested in asking him any questions about how he learned English or what he's been up to mm-hmm. or anything. Like, she's very single-minded, and he also at the same time is like not Jin is like one, he's not a mythology guy like we talked about with Sawyer last week, right? Like, Jin's not a mythology guy, he's a where's my wife guy, and so like they're both very single-minded, so like there are going to be moments in this episode where people are going to be frustrated that they're not getting answered. Maybe they're going to be frustrated at a certain doctor for interrupting possible answers that they think they're about to get. But like, this is another way in which the show is frustrating answers by putting Jin and Claire together, who are not interested in interrogating each other, really. Where's my baby? Where's my wife? That's where we are with these two. So
I should maybe go to the temple, but maybe not. It's gonna be an interesting showdown. Mm. Joanna, if I were to say squirrel baby before this podcast, you would have had to bleep it. But tell me what you think about that squirrel baby.
I mean, it's an iconic Lost moment, the squirrel baby moment. It's pretty horrifying. Like, poor Claire, right? Like, just mm-hmm. really poor Claire. Yeah. I don't know. How much do you... here's my question for you guys. We talked about this a lot with WandaVision. Like, how much do you think this like, leans into this sort of, like, hysterical woman trope by having, like, both Rousseau and Claire who lose their babies... cuckoo in the woods? Because, like, I like that we're calling her Feral Claire, because I don't like throwing around the C word and stuff like that, though I might have in this already. But, like, how do we feel about that?
I think that it is there. I don't want to deny that it's not there, but I think it's a sign of a couple of things that Lost, by the time it ends, falls into, whereas in trying to do this, the island's history has sort of like echoes the same way they're sort of trying to pair season 6 episodes to season 1 episodes. In some cases, that makes for messy, you know, transitions, like somebody needing to have a baby stolen and then they become like a feral hunter on the island is a trope that, yes, is only going to be filled by women, but also, like, the reality of that laid out just doesn't look good, you know? It doesn't feel intentionally like a slight to me.
No.
It feels more like an accident of society.
But that's sort of, I think that's a lot of Lost problems.
Right.
Is it sort of like the function of having like a lot of white men writing these shows, right? You know what mm-hmm. I mean? And I love Lost and I'm here for it. And I love this episode genuinely. But like, I think when we do identify these problems, it doesn't seem like these are like malicious acts. They're just casual, ignorant, mistakes. But like, you know, just one more set of eyeballs on this maybe would have interrogated this a little further, I guess.
It's also like, by the time we were done with Rousseau, she actually, like, wasn't crazy. Like, we spent enough time with that version of the character to see an evolution from, you know, the threat in the dark to, like, Danielle. And we met her daughter, and we figured out, like, the whole situation, how screwed up it was there. Here, it's like... this version of Claire is the version of Rousseau that would have given in to that infection and gone, you know, like, fully feral and dark, because apparently she's been claimed. So it's almost like if we had more time with this Claire, obviously it ruins the whole surprise, but we had one whole season where we didn't even think about Claire or Rousseau, and therefore the whole idea that the island might manifest this some sort of way kind of gets moot because we've been shown a time period where it's not required.
Mm. It's interesting.
It makes it less, it gives them less firm ground to stand on when they said, I guess they were doing it like as a mistake.
Claire's definitely in a different space than Rousseau, because Rousseau would not, we think, have put an axe. Like, she didn't kill Saeed, right?
Right.
And nor did Claire kill Jin, but, like, she put an axe in Justin. I mean, I feel like Rousseau would have shot another if she was sure they were another. But, like, the old rusty axe in the chest, that's a real, strong move from Claire. Oh, my God.
That's the difference between, like, a scientist who knew how to use a gun before she went on her expedition and a pregnant Australian lady who crash-landed on the island.
Yeah, and you can see that how the show is trying to, like, weave in this idea of, like, being claimed or being corrupted by something on the island that is, you know, it's what is infecting Saeed, and it's ultimately what the others say has infected Claire. And, you know, the show's trying to, like, use that to sort of, I guess, it seems like they're just trying to divide who's left into... you know, some of these people are now broken and wrong, and some of these people are, you know, having comedy hour through the jungle. but I will say this. I think that this idea that, like, of Claire and Saeed being, like, claimed, really not one of my favorite things that they do in this last season. You know, like they could have come up with good enough reasons for Claire to be chaotic without having it be like, oh, well, like, you know, she got this mysterious sickness or she got infected by something on the island.
Or I guess like choose a lane between those two things. Like either Claire is not infected and she's been through some shit and like, yeah, spending 3 years on the island of mystery is going to do things to you.
Mm-hmm.
But then, or you could go like, I would have been even more satisfied with a more direct claiming, like an X-Files Black Oil sort of thing, where it's just like, this is now not the person anymore, which would have divided even more. The thing about like Saeed is he seems like he's Saeed.
He seems fine.
A little bit more blinkered than usual, but seems like normal. And Claire seems like she has no idea of the passage of time from day to day because she seems to be still after a baby / doesn't know that she's been there for 3 years when Jin asks. And then also like has no other real priorities. Like when Rousseau was setting traps, she was setting traps to keep the others out, but also to hunt for her food. Claire just seems to be like this chaotic force that's running around.
The other weird thing about the whole Claire situation, and I think maybe it goes back to the decision, the story decision to have Claire leave Aaron alone in the jungle, right? Because what we're seeing from Claire is like, okay, she's been sort of claimed and is, you know, dark now, but also she's still hung up on the Aaron thing, and it's always been weird to me that the reason why she doesn't have Aaron is because she left him on a leaf and walked off into the jungle. It wasn't like Ben showed up, you know, with Rousseau and literally stole her baby out of her tent. This is a little bit different.
Remember when Claire just left Aaron on a leaf?
Right? Like, that will never make sense, especially now that we see that Claire is still 3 years later very hung up about the baby. She's like, they stole my baby. It's like, no, you left your baby.
You just left him and wandered off.
Like, you're super lucky that, like, Sawyer showed up and picked up the baby
after your
gave
ghost
him to
dad,
Kate.
Who you have no reason to know that he's your dad, so you just, like, saw a shoeless dude and
so I think this is one of those, like, corners into which they wrote themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very tough to write yourself out of that corner when you still want Claire to be, like, you know, come show up in season 6 and be like an agent of chaos. And
Neil, if you were a writer on a television show and I was like, okay, in this episode, she could just leave the baby and walk off into the jungle, wouldn't your first question to me be like, so are we done with Claire then? Like,
right? Or like, so like, how are we going to explain this later? Because someone will eventually ask.
And this is in the period of time of the show where they knew they were going to end the show. Like, they knew they were coming up on an end.
Why is that baby on a leaf?
Yeah, like, what? Why did Claire do that?
Did you have a better mystery answer? I mean, I guess we edged close to it where when we were talking about the leaf episode, Claire was supposed to be having, like, a vision while the Otherton was under attack.
Right.
That was, like, sort of cut. But even then, I can't... It's hard for me to think of a vision that gets us to where we are now, where the vision's like, put the baby down.
Right.
Walk this way. After, like, spending so many seasons where Claire and the baby, like, that's the only thing that makes Claire.
Mm-hmm. Here's what I know, guys. If there's one thing that'll kill you around here, it's infection. Wink to camera. Drag axe. Wink to camera.
Yeah. Anyway. I mean, listen, I enjoy, like, dark Claire. Same. And sort of the Jaws-like vibes of, like, oh my god, what's Claire gonna do? But when you really think back to it about, like, what is driving her, like, what is Claire's motivation at this point, it's really silly because she really did bring this sort of on herself.
Well, they didn't know what to do with Claire after, like, she has the baby and then they lose Charlie and they're like, oops. Mm-hmm. Like,
we forgot to build in something for Claire, like how we made Sawyer the sheriff over an entire season.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's similar to what happened with, like, Michael and Walt, right? Once Walt's gone, what do you do with Michael? you can't. Mm-hmm. So you're just like, well, blow that
he ran
up.
Ran out of things to build.
So anyway, yeah.
Blowing up lots of problems. And,
we love to blow up problems. All right, so that is Feral Clair.
What's in the hatch? It's a computer. Boom, it's gone. Blown up. Too bad. Don't worry about it.
Maybe we should have not only got Feral Clair, we should have also gotten Feral Aaron, is all I'm saying.
Ooh, Feral Aaron.
Oh my god, Feral Toddler? Oh.
Like, if she would have walked off in the jungle with the baby, that would have been an insane mystery.
Oh, that would have been great, but then, like, what's...
Like a Mowgli.
What's Kate's, Kate's motivation for anything?
We gotta find another one.
Find another baby.
I gotta get back to my horse. I saw it on the island.
Yeah, I mean, the horse, obviously.
Never ask me about the horse again, Jack. If you want me to go with you, never ask me about
never
the horse.
Never ask me about the horse again.
All right. What are we doing now?
I'm just imagining the helicopter scene where Lapidus is like, oh, we got too much weight. And instead of turning and looking at Hurley, they turn and they look and it's the horse. And it's like, horse, I don't know, man. I don't think you're going to make it.
I mean, we love you and all, and it's really important, but...
And then Sawyer jumps out of the helicopter on the back of the horse, like Man from Snowy Mountain, and...
Yeah.
And that's how that ends.
And he and the horse swim, and they both end up shirtless on the beach.
Yeah, then it's Sawyer Black Stallion, and that's the movie.
That sounds great. Would watch.
All right, let's turn to our favorite Doctor in Crisis... Who, I'm going to go out on a limb here, has a good episode.
It's a great episode for Jack, both on island and wherever else we are. Two good episodes. I mean, he has a hissy fit. But, like, let's talk about Jack Shepard saying, because I was broken and I was stupid enough to think this place could fix me. The self-awareness, the growth. I'm into it. Anyway, sorry, jumping the gun, but I just, like... I know it's unpopular. I love final season Jack, so I'm here.
I mean, if you want to enter in through the climax moments, we could do that and build outwards. Everyone, I presume, has seen the episode at this point. But yes, there is some great Jack, and most importantly, I think, is the sideways portrayal of Jack as a father. Like, spoiler for Spot the Difference Corner, there's this kid named David. He's been around for a while. And Jack,
and he's got a good dad named Jack.
Yeah, he's avoided drinking, which is good for him. He's not maybe there to the extent that he could be for poor David, but it doesn't seem like David's horribly traumatized, like not as much as Jack was by a father telling him he wasn't good enough the whole time.
I think it's possible that Jack has been a bad dad, and that he's... and then I think it's also possible that he did have a drinking problem. That's my interpretation of his mom's reaction, right? But I think the death of his own father in this timeline kicks something loose in him. And then his mom talking to him about it, et cetera, helps him understand what he's been doing wrong with his kid. And he goes and he fixes it. It's something he can fix, and it's so good. Can I tell you my mirror thing?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we've talked about, we've got a corner for this, but we talked about the mirror stuff. The mirror stuff in this episode is really obvious, both on island and off, right? There's the mirrors in the lighthouse, and then there's the mirror that he starts, like, looking at his appendix scar at the beginning of the episode, etc. But isn't the most important mirror of all... little David Shepard? Like, isn't that Jack looking at his, like, a version of himself as a kid? Like, Jack getting to be the father to himself that his father never was. There's just these concentric circles of, like, Shepardness that I just love in this episode.
Let me ask you more about these mirrors. In the lighthouse, when Jack cranks that old mirror to number 23, he sees his childhood home, which we see him in the Sideways universe, when he's with his mom and looking for the will. Is it possible that the lighthouse mirrors are actually, like, able to look into whatever the Sideways is?
Whoa.
That was
sideways peeping.
That was definitely a popular theory at the time.
Sideways peeping.
Yeah, it's too bad he broke the mirrors.
Not his best move. But listen, if you found out that someone had been spying on you since childhood.
Well, is it bad that he broke the mirrors? Because Jacob seems like everything went according to plan here. Jacob seems like the writer's room of Lost, being like, yes, yes, now blow up, Jack. Yes, now act break. Now look at the ocean. Yes, now you're primed to do whatever we need you to do.
Yeah, and it Jacob's works. Like, he's like, listen, it's chill that you broke the mirrors because now I don't have to answer any more questions about it.
Exactly.
Now you won't like turn it to a different number and find out some other shit about me.
It's perfect. Yeah, you found out just enough and then destroyed the evidence.
I mean, what seemed to have been Jacob's real agenda was to get Jack and Hurley out of the temple area and out mm-hmm. of danger of whatever's coming to the temple, right?
Yeah. Yes. I think he also just wanted to, like, cause Jack to break a little bit.
Yep.
Like, because Jack was going a little catatonic in the temple, mm-hmm. being like, oh, things are, they tried to poison you. Weird thing, huh? Weird thing about that. And I'm like, man, old Jack would have still been mad about that, because that was like an hour ago.
But let's talk about shitty dad god Jacob, right? Because like he gives Hurley the fucking Manchurian Candidate words to activate Jack, like the trauma words to activate Jack.
Mm-hmm.
Bullshit move as far as I'm concerned. And then like Jack gets to the lighthouse and bad dad god Jacob's not there. It's just like another empty casket. He's just sort of like, he followed the promise of like someone who would tell me has it what it takes through the jungle, and then there was no one there. Like, mm-hmm. Jacob,
I'm gonna wreck it.
Yeah, and then Jacob shows up and is like, "Yeah, don't worry about any of that stuff.
Oh my god, I'm just glad
you're here.
I'm not here for it. I don't like it.
No, and I think I love a lot of what Hurley is doing in this episode. Mm-hmm. Everything from the comedy moment that he has with Dogen. I guess you could call it comedy. I laughed. Because I, you know, Hurley get it. He also gets some of the lore, I guess. Now we know that Hurley is a candidate and that candidates have some power, or at least some freedom that cannot be infringed upon by the temple others. And then I love that Hurley basically gives Jacob a hard time at the end. He's like, listen, man, I'm not into these secret plans. And, you know, bad dad god just sort of laughs it off. But shout out to Hurley for standing up for himself.
Yeah. I got ink on my forehead. Fuck you.
Right?
Listen, Jesus. I've been talking to you about a lot of stuff. Could you just be straightforward with me, please?
I am going to kill you again.
Can we talk about so if we're counting LAX as one episode, this mm-hmm. is our fourth episode, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in those episodes, we have discovered a temple, a cave, and a lighthouse. Like,
that have all been there the whole time.
I mean, and mm-hmm. I do like that line reading from Hurley about, like, you know, we weren't looking for it or whatever.
All
like,
of Hurley's dialogue, the meta dialogue that we're on another trip in the jungle in season 6 actually plays really well because it's fucking Hurley.
Because Hurley, and he can deliver any line. But I'm just sort of like, enough now. Lost. Enough. Please don't take me to another stone structure for at least two more episodes. Thank you.
Right. Right. We just got over the foot.
Yeah.
Too bad. All we got to go even more ancient now that we've been back to Darwin.
There's an astrolab. An ancient astrolab. The ancient paddling pool. Yeah. We'll
see. Surprise, now we're playing Myst. Let's go out to the observatory and read some books. We described Jack wandering into the jungle on the orders of a ghost and finding an empty vessel, which seems like a good place to, Joanna, remind me what other Lost episodes are kind of thrown into this lighthouse smoothie.
Yeah, well, we've been talking about the way in which these final season episodes are reflecting often multiple episodes that came before them. So this is like the clearest hybrid. This is White Rabbit, which is after the pilot, like the first solo Jack episode, right?
Mm-hmm.
Jack following the sound of tinkling ice into the jungle, right?
And then running right off a cliff. That's how into it he was.
So there's that, you know, and there's a lot of allusions to that. There's, you know, Alice in Wonderland. We'll talk about Alice in Wonderland a little bit more. The key to David's mom's house is under a rabbit, like stuff like that, right? So there's all that stuff. But there's also Solitary, which is the Rousseau Saeed episode from season one, right? We get that with Jen and Claire. We get a reference to Something Nice Back Home, which is an episode we didn't like, but that's the one with like Jack's appendix surgery, right? And we, in this version of things, it was Jack's dad who insisted on doing the appendix surgery and stuff like that. So plus, like,
instead of Jack insisting that he be able to operate on himself.
Yeah. Something Nice Back Home. Also, we see Jack trying to father Aaron in that episode, and that's where he gets his conviction that like he would have been a terrible dad, right? We see mm-hmm. him reading Alice in Wonderland to Aaron, and like then that all went kind of south. And then A Tale of Two Cities, I guess I bring A Tale of Two Cities up. That's the one where Jack like that's the one where Jack gets like paranoid that his dad is having an affair fucking Sarah and crashes his AA meeting and stuff like that. And in crashing his AA meeting, I guess push Christian off the wagon if you feel like giving Jack the blame for that. Pushes Christian off. Only oneself can push oneself off the wagon, right? But mm-hmm. he like basically like something that's interesting about that episode is like it's Jack telling Christian like, I don't think you have what it takes. I don't think you have what it takes not to like fuck my ex-wife or whatever, right? In parallel to Christian telling young Jack he doesn't have what it takes. So like these wounds of that father-son combo has inflicted on each other and stuff like that. So I think that's all the meat that's in this stew. Am I missing anything?
No, I think that's correct. And they're all more or less like emotional echoes.
Mm.
If the show wants you to remember something, it will
just tell
bring
you.
It up. Yeah.
It'll just
like,
be,
hey, remember those skeletons? I wonder if that's us time traveling. Either way, remember it. Like that, which happens in this episode, which is interesting.
It's Shannon's inhaler.
Yeah. Which that apparently
they finally found it.
A fun side story, according to Lostpedia, which is they had Jorge Garcia surprise Damon and Carlton at a Comic-Con Lost panel. And the question that he asked was, what happened to Shannon's inhaler? And so apparently they put this in because the joke answer they gave at the panel was that's not an important enough mystery to have an answer to. And the audience didn't like that answer.
Oh, no.
So here you go. It was just outside the caves.
It was in the underbrush.
It was over there. Hope you like those answers, guys.
Yeah, Sawyer got tortured over that shit.
Oh, mm-hmm. I forgot about that. Okay, can I ask you a question, Dave?
Yeah.
How John is Jack in this episode?
How John is Jack in this episode? This is the staring out at the ocean part that Jack's currently doing when we leave him in this episode should have been the end of John's journey, but John never actually got to smash God's mirrors. Like, he never got close enough. Like, I feel like at some point, if John would have been frustrated enough, you know, if John would have had the I want to demand to somebody who has spoken to God why he's been watching us. I think when John had that moment, he realized that the person who had been speaking to God was Ben and he wasn't. And so therefore kind of throws him off. John has to become his own Messiah. Whereas Jack, I think, is able to like push through it. He's able to get the real answer, which is God is not interested in you. Or the Jacob side of the answer, which is sometimes you can't jump in the back of someone's cab and tell him what to do. You have to let him stare at the ocean for a while. Mm. I'm sad that John never got to his breaking moment where he stared at the ocean for a while. He never sort of got to fulfill his final mission, because as we know now, his final mission was polluted by the Man in Black. And sort of like manipulated off island. John's whole idea that he had to die to get everybody back, it doesn't seem, based on anything we know about, that actually came from Jacob. It came from the Man in Black. So it makes me more sad for John because he wasn't given the opportunity, I don't think, to have his full reversal.
Neil, can I ask you a similar question, but like slightly reframe it? On if man of science is 0 and man of faith is 10, what number do you put Jack in this episode?
Ooh. Well, I think before they get to the lighthouse, Jack is a higher number, like a 7 or an 8, feeling very man of faith. Although, you know, as we remember, it was a few episodes ago where Jack's faith was once again shaken because he believed very strongly that his destiny was to reset the timeline and totally did not work, at least as far as he knows on the island. And, you know, I think finding out that Jacob has, you know, secret mirrors and won't show up to the Zoom call to answer questions is going to bring him back down to, I don't know, I feel like there's a lot more apathy in Jack at the end of this. It's not even like science versus faith. It's just like Jack is just seems kind of defeated, which, you know, does sort of create a blank slate. So like now maybe Jack can do something productive now that he's learned that like whatever faith he had placed in Jacob or this new mission that they got from Jacob, he just feels like it's bullshit now. So he's going to stare out into the ocean and sort of sink back to like a 2 or a 3 on the science faith scale.
I almost feel like he's waiting for someone to tell him the thing to do that feels right. Mm-hmm. Like he got back and that felt right. Now we learn it's because he thought the island, you know, could maybe fix him because he was broken. So that acknowledgement that he's broken, that's at least right. But then he sort of is aimless in Dharmaville for a while until Faraday comes back and he's like, you know, we could reset everything. And Jack's like, this feels right. This feels like the thing I'm supposed to do. And so he does it, but then once again, he's back in the situation. So Jack keeps running up against the danger that I think Locke is the trap that Locke fell into, which is, this is my purpose, and then full-throatedly, like, just doing it. Hopefully this time, after smashing some mirrors, he, you know, is able to come to a better understanding of what that purpose is. Or he's just waiting for a purpose to show itself that feels correct to him. So like feeling like there's a god who is going to be at this place that we're going to go to, and then he's going to have all the answers, having that carpet yanked out from under him is like maybe where John was when he was trying to like hang himself. And then Ben actually talked him like back out of that. But then right when there was a moment where he could have had some sort of clarity, he got murdered.
Well, yeah. So like Jack and John, to varying degrees, because of their bad dads, and we know what the show is about, right? So like because of their bad dads, they are in a place of like worthlessness, and the way that like John cope with that is different from the way that Jack coped with it. Like, you know, Jack has some like extreme excellence in his life that went along with it. John feels like he's become a complete loser working in a box factory. That's him judging himself, not me judging him. Love you, John. But this idea that they're looking, they're frantically looking for some other daddy substitute to tell them that they have what it takes, or that they are chosen, that they are destined for something, they have purpose, they have meaning. You know, to John's dad, let him know that he meant nothing to him. You mean nothing, right? You're worthless. And, you know, Christian told Jack, you don't have what it takes. And they're both seeking that answer. And I think Jack is in a place much closer to John in terms of where he's looking for the source of that answer, right? Which is Mystery Island God. I'm broken and I was stupid enough to think this place could fix me.
Yeah. So. Also, I mean, in contrast to John, John never really got to learn this, but Jack now knows that even Island God Dad is bad.
Yep. Yeah. He's a creeper. He's
with, right. He's,
I mean,
the mask is off on all the dads.
Jacob's kind of funny in this episode. Like, there's some comedy stuff, but at the same time, like that opening shot of him where he's just like loitering by the muddy pool. You know, I'm like, mm-hmm. I wrote in my notes, you fucking creep. You total creep. And keep it creepily intruding on Hurley's existence. Like, back the fuck off.
Right. Withholding information from our guy Hurley, who mm-hmm. just wants to help and mm-hmm. do some Indiana Jones stuff.
Exactly.
It's very disappointing. The worst dad is the island god.
Mm-hmm. Sky, it's bad sky dad, you know?
Yeah. Yep.
Speaking of bad dads, let's flip back to good dad town, because it's interesting now that we've seen people make choices in the sideways that we could sort of divide that and I guess question it. So Jack is able to, as you pointed out, Joanna, actually fix this problem in his life in the sideways universe by daring to connect his son. Whatever, fine. He gets around there eventually.
No, he gives a great speech.
Is that
great
something that,
good dad speech.
Yeah. Is that something that mainline Jack would have been even capable of doing? I mean, he doesn't have a son, but in terms of, like, anyone in his life, have we ever seen him being able to cut through the emotional bullshit and actually try to solve the problem?
No.
I mean, not yet, no.
Hmm. This Jack. This is different. Because mm-hmm. Kate's still running.
I think there's some stuff he said to Kate, you know, about their relationship, I think. Maybe not. Maybe I'm misremembering. Maybe I'm just thinking about Sawyer being like, which time, Kate? Which fucking time? you know, and in part of that, I think for Sideways Jack, I think what we're meant to understand is part of that has to do with John, talking to John, right? Mm-hmm. In the baggage, lost luggage claim, you know what I mean? Talking about their baggage. But also, like, I think that Jack-John connection is going to continue to be so vital in all of this. But also, I mean, I really liked his interaction with Kate here, like in this episode. Like, Kate shows up, I don't know, it's a little random, but and kind of as like
everyone's very laid back for how fucking weird this island is. Being, like, oh, I almost shot you.
oh, Jack. but like, and mostly it feels like a prompt for Hurley to ask about like what happened, right? Like all of that sort of stuff. And Jack is just taking ownership for like, you know, I fucked up and this, I was not cut out for it and I couldn't do it. You know what I mean? I think that's good and mature.
So we have Jack that seems to be capable of positive change in the sideways here. Last episode, it seems like there's a Locke that is capable of, you know, mm-hmm. facing his fears and accepting them. What happened with Kate?
Well, I think she did. Like, I think Kate...
Listen, she didn't abandon Claire entirely.
Claire. Yeah, she went back for Claire.
I'm supposed to see that as a positive character development.
Yeah, I mean,
she went back for the pregnant woman.
I think there's another version of Kate that wouldn't have gone back for Claire.
I see what you're saying. I wish it would have been cleaner if that's what we're doing. I don't even know if that's what we're doing in the Sideways universe. It just seems interesting to me, connecting patterns. Like, are these people... What makes this universe... What's allowing different. Them to be happy? Whereas it seems like in the other universe, no matter how many times they try... They cannot be happy.
It feels like connection. It feels like connection in a way, like clearing through that baggage that's obstructed them from this stuff before. Like, no, Jack never had a David in any other version that we met him in, right? But like, if you think about Aaron or you think about Sarah, like all this crap was getting in the way of him being able to like actually connect to them. All this trauma, all the scar tissue. Same with John and Helen, right? All this like shitty baggage that he's carrying around from his shitty dad. That's what blew up his relationship with Helen, right? And with Kate, mm-hmm. Kate, it's much messier. I completely agree with you, Dave. But I think this Kate who always runs and who instead went back, she didn't keep running. She went back for Claire. And that connection that she makes with Claire here, I think that's, they're trying to put that on the same, that bead on the same string as the other beads. You know what I mean?
Got it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just wanted to lampshade that a little bit if that's what was happening, because it seems like John and Jack's episodes, beautifully executed in the sideways. Really enjoyed them. I guess we just had to get Kate out the gate.
Kate out
fast.
The gate. I also think that the David and Jack stuff is a bit of a Walt and Michael mirror, right?
Mm.
Like, if we think about their dynamic in season one with, like, you know, Michael wanting to be a good dad, but he's been absent from his kid's life. The circumstances are different, but, like, you know, and Walt being kind of like thirsty for a dad, but distrustful of his dad and all this sort of stuff like that. And Michael being a little overeager and Walt pushing him away, like all that sort of stuff. I kind of see it refracted through. I mean, these are all just like the same creator working out his own issues on screen.
Or
so
David's going to manifest a polar bear next episode.
Can David not only play the piano, but speak through computers?
Yes, go into the piano, the electric piano. Speaking of, David is a very good piano player and is getting into a school that he's submitting to. As I yelled over earlier, the banner says all candidates welcome, which I thought was like, hey, there's that word again. Seems important. But also, we get Dogen, which I also mentioned earlier, which is interesting because we have spent most of the time in this sideways universe, the people who are on Flight 815. Dogen is not one of those people.
Yep. He's in there too, somehow. And he's also seems like a good dad. Shout out to Dogen.
Yeah, and he rolls with the punches.
On Island is torturing people, but in the sideways is seems to be pretty chill.
If I would have been like, how long has your son been playing piano? And the answer of the dude was like, I don't know. My first response would have been like, it seems odd that you're here then.
Shout out to, well, also just quickly in case some people didn't look up the translation, the thing that Dogen says to Hurley in the hallway in Japanese, he says, you're lucky that I have to protect you, otherwise I'd have cut your head off. So great stuff from Murder Templeville. But
now
shout
you made
out-
me lie to a samurai.
But shout out to the production designer in this episode, because Jack's like tragic divorce dad apartment versus like David's lived in room and his real home. I grew up around a lot of versions of that, for sure. That was very familiar to
me. Hey, check it out. I hooked up the cable in your room. Thanks, Dad.
I have literally one photo that pertains to the Red Sox up in your room.
Right.
This is cozy, right,
David? Well, and also it's funny because when they get to David's room at his mom's house, there's the pictures of David and he's wearing a Dodgers hat.
Oh, but
which
he's
not
with
even
Jack.
The Red Sox.
Yeah.
Right. So Jack is the kind of dad who remembers that there was just a baseball thing they shared once, but can't even get the kids. I mean, they live in LA. Like, what? I don't know. It's funny. That's how you can tell that Jack was at one point a bad dad.
A pretty bad dad, probably.
Yeah. Not very observant.
And the reason that I think the death of Christian is what sort of cracks Jack open, right, is because of that answering machine message that he hears on David's machine from himself, where he called David, I just want to hear your voice. And come on, Matthew Fox's cry face in that moment is really, that's the good shit. Right.
Sometimes there. The jeers really pay off.
They really do. They really do. Yeah.
We have the final character named Dave that we'll be introduced to in the series. No more beeps, guys. Here he is. He's a little boy. It makes it a lot harder to fit into the all Dave's theory, but this is like an alternate universe. So maybe not, you know, I don't know. I don't know what ports over. Why couldn't, Jack secretly want, piano playing Cheech as a son? I think that's fine. Who doesn't want a piano playing Cheech? I'm sure even Cheech would like to be a piano playing Cheech. Come on,
all Dave's theory.
Yeah, so he's got that kid in this alternate timeline grows up to marry Libby, father like a future Hugo. Like, I don't know. That's the only way it would have to work.
A future time traveling Hugo.
Future time traveling Hugo. I think maybe once we've got this whole series done, I could have a better idea for all the Daves. But right now,
we're gonna need a chart, I think.
Yeah, right now that right, is the odd Dave.
No, okay, so here it is. So Jack's son in the Sideways is David. He grows up to become Cheech, and then ends up on the island, and then is transported back in time, and then gets off the island to then Father Hurley.
All right.
And then leaves them, hooks up with Libby for a while, and mm-hmm. then fakes his own death when he hears that Hurley won the lottery and goes mm-hmm. back to Hurley.
Yeah.
And buys a boat in the meantime.
Uh-huh. The Elizabeth.
The Elizabeth.
Yeah. No, this all makes total sense.
I still want to see the flowchart.
Just involves more time travel somehow. But
the question
shout out
about that child growing into Cheech poses a question that is sort of sideways in this entire episode, which is, who's the mom there?
You know,
how is that David going to grow up into Cheech?
It's unclear.
With Miss the family sitcom future. What's her name? Julie Bowen.
Julie Bowen.
Miss mm-hmm. Family's not Mexican in any sort of way. It's going to be...
No, that's a fair criticism.
But, you know, island magic works in mysterious ways.
Well, yeah, and, you know, we don't know how time travel changes people.
That's a good point.
You just never know.
Yeah. He could have... It could be... like, David could be maybe Desmond.
He was being transported through the Hume hole, he could have had, you know, his DNA altered in some way.
Ooh. I like it.
Do you guys know what is significant about the music that David has selected to play for his audition here?
Mm-mm.
So it's Fantasia Impromptu in C sharp minor by Chopin. And the last time that we heard that song being played by a character on Lost, it was poor Daniel Faraday, who Ooh. Also wanted to be a pianist. And his mom was like, no.
Oh, there's a fun fact that goes with this. Another connection between David and Daniel Faraday, which is that David's phone number has a 734 area code, and that is the area code for Ann Arbor, Michigan, which is where Dan Faraday was for several years working with the Dharma.
David has a 734 area code phone number?
Apparently.
Why?
According to Lostpedia.
Okay.
Yeah. Not bad for a kid that lives in Los Angeles.
I guess. I mean, like, nowadays we all have, like, our weird vestigial area codes on our cell phone numbers, or some of us do, mm-hmm. right? Like, my sister still has, like, a Brooklyn number, even though she's lived in California for over a decade, back in California. Mm-hmm. But, like, where did that Ann Arbor number come from, man?
Also, maybe and how does that mom. Ann Arbor... How does that Ann Arbor number end up on what appears to be a landline phone, like, answering machine in California?
What the hell?
These are the questions we want answered from Lost.
Forget Shannon's inhaler. This is what really matters.
Is this a clue about the universe, or are you guys just fucking with me?
Are the area codes different in the Sideways?
Area codes, like, are different in the Sideways. Can't prove otherwise.
I did like the other thing that Jack at the recital or audition reminds me of is the end of Billy Elliot, which is one of my favorite movies of all time. When his dad, who, you know, earlier in the movie was like, Bali's for girls. He sees his son do ballet, and he's just sort of, and he gasps and he cries. It's just sort of like this, you know, Jack watching David play at the audition is a real strong moment for me mm-hmm. in Lost history.
Yeah,
cool.
That's it. I mean, unless we want to talk about who's coming to the island, who's going to have to find another way to get there other than the lighthouse.
That might have to be in a corner, because I think that's an act break award that we don't address. But
all right.
Here we go. It's corner time. Neil, we got some Giacchino corner this week.
Yeah, I just wanted to flag, you know, we've been tracking the traveling theme. The first traveling theme has been adapted. It's a really interesting piece of music as Hurley and Jack approach the lighthouse and then knock down the door. It's called Door Jammer. which is a good name, but also it is it's a variant of sort of the early traveling theme.
The Hollywood and Vines thing?
Yeah, it's got a more, like, it's got a little more energy.
Does it have a little Peter Gabriel sledgehammer? Because that's what I hear when you say, "Jammer." There's also that, like, I'll just keep calling it the grail theme when Jacob's sitting by the pool. it's like wind instruments of mystical mystery. Here comes Jacob.
It's like Jacob in the Temple of Doom, the theme.
Yeah. Our jungle of mystery moment is just the whole lighthouse. It's pretty fully explained in this episode, so there you go. If you know what that is, if you know how it magically reflects things from other times and spaces, please do let us know.
It's just funny to me that, like, the temple I get, because the temple seems like buried deep in the woods, that they would never find the temple. But we now have multiple very tall structures.
Yeah, when
Saeed that are on the coastline.
Also, when Saeed not far walked from the perimeter. The cave.
Yeah.
Right. Not far from the cave. Apparently, according to the map, I looked up the map that a cartographer did back in the day for Lost. And apparently the lighthouse is, like, right around the corner from the Looking Glass station. And Rousseau's camp.
Oh,
and it's like,
so
all
when right. Yeah, when Saeed was doing his walk around, he found the cord and went into the jungle. If he just would have looked up,
he would have walked right past it.
Yeah,
classic.
Almost got it. The Boone Carlyle Memorial Falling Down Award goes to Jin, who wonders if he could walk on that foot and then instantly passes out from bear trapped leg pain.
Yeah, tough break for Jin.
Tough break for Jin. Or
and then Claire dragged his beefcakey Korean ass through the jungle to her garbage yurt. Shout out to Claire. I would like to see those guns under that flannel.
The reason why her hair doesn't look so great is because she spent all of her time doing push-ups to get ready to carry Jin.
The John Locke Memorial Coming Back Award goes to our two skeletons, Adam and Eve. It's been 101 episodes since we've seen those guys in House of the Rising Sun, I believe, in the first season. Just in case you forgot they were there, they're two skeletons. When Jack found them, there was a little pouch, and inside the pouch there was one black rock and one white rock. It's weird. It's like we've seen those things recently.
Odd.
I guess I'm out of the book club. Again, very obvious this week. Alice in Wonderland returns with a nice big cover shot of a very pretty illustrated
edition that Jack was reading to Aaron.
We can transfer objects through the sideways.
I think it's an annotated edition too. And so, like, yeah. And of course, there's just been like a million references, you know, like White Rabbit, we talked about, like the Looking Glass Station through the Looking Glass.
Everyone looking in mirrors.
Yeah. So
the part in Alice in Wonderland where she throws a hot pocket and it hits a wall and it definitely falls down.
Yeah. Sorry.
The fact that all the Davids in Alice in Wonderland are the same Davids. It's wild.
Jabberwocky David.
You know what's funny is like when did you notice what part of Alice that David was really interested in?
The cats, right?
The cats.
Yeah.
David loves those kittens, which are barely part of Alice in Wonderland.
They're like there at the beginning and have lots of thoughts and then are there at the end. It is odd. All right. The Abs of Turtle Award goes to, you know, Jack. Look at his appendix scar. Look at that. Look at that boy. That sideways boy. Yeah. It's in pretty good shape.
Matthew Fox has some abs.
He does.
For the most part.
And a scar.
A scar from getting his appendix out. Ben's talking, so it's obviously a lie award. No Ben this week, so it goes to Hurley. Says to Dogan, "Nothing. I'm just, you know, looking because I'm a fan of temples and like history, Indiana Jones stuff."
Runner up to Jin, who was like, "Yes, I was lying.
Yes,
about
I was
Kate.
Lying about Kate."
Yeah, I also think that Hurley could have been telling at least partially the truth.
I'm sure Hurley isn't Indiana Jones stuff.
Right. Hurley's the only person who's having a good time at the temple. He's like, "Oh, look at all these symbols."
Remember that like great TikTok? Do you think they constructed that, or do you think the temple, the flower gatherers at the temple had already pre-made that tic-tac-toe game?
Oh, I hope they constructed it. Because if that's like 5,000 island years of your tic-tac-toe game, and you're still just, like, tying, like, fronds together. Like, get it together, island gamers.
And so Curly has now played ping pong, horseshoes, poker,
golf,
tic-tac-toe, golf. I mean, our cruise director, recreational king.
Right.
Curly, yes.
Yeah, I mean, what Claire has been missing these last 3 years is someone to help her find outlets for entertainment.
It's true.
She's
too much time just stewing on the fact that she totally left her baby in the jungle.
On a leaf.
On a leaf. Our Spot the Difference corner, inspired by the old Highlights magazine, we had a picture, different stuff. Our Sideways, I think the major difference is David.
There's a whole boy. There's a whole boy named David.
Jack.
Played by
Jack has a child. Yeah.
Played by, we should say, Dylan Minnette, who went on to star in 13 Reasons Why and a number of other things. I think one of our listeners called him perpetual teen Dylan Minnette because I think he's still playing teenagers. So, yep.
One day he'll age out of that, as we've learned from recent film musical trailers.
Hopefully he realizes it sooner than the Evan Hansen guy.
Yeah, we'll see. He'll have Evan Hansen will come for him. Our jungle of Kistery. This is where we put up on a poll your guys' suggestions after our live watch as to who needs to be kissing on this island of mystery. Let's talk about the results to The Substitute, Joanna.
I'm sorry, I just found out that the next thing that Dylan Minnette is doing is he's going to be in the fifth Scream movie, so I'm going to go out on a limb and say, still playing a teen, Dylan Minnette.
Still perpetual teenager.
Okay. I mean, it could be college, but you never know with the Scream movie.
But it's probably not.
All right, so Dave put together our Kistery poll last week based on our listeners watching in the live watch on Saturdays. His candidates here were Drunk Sawyer and Fake Locke, Lapidus and the Eulogy, Sawyer and Panicked Richard, and John Locke and Helen. And for a little while there, Sawyer and Panicked Richard, or no, it was either Drunk, one of the Sawyer ones was ahead. And I went into our Slack and said, absolutely not. Sawyer has won like the last three Kistery polls. I love him. He's hot. We love him. But this is John and Helen's episode. And they did take it with 43.8% of the vote. So,
Is this a good place for me to admit that I voted for Sawyer and Panic Richard?
You're out of the book club.
They needed to at least hug. Richard was very stressed out.
Richard still needed out there.
It. Yeah, Richard still needs someone to hug him.
Richard's still running around looking for babies on leaves or dead Christian Shepherd or whatever. Something
like Jack is sitting there by the coastline, staring out there, contemplating whether or not Jacob is a huge asshole or not. And Richard is running around like you have no idea.
Yeah.
The Charlie Pace Memorial Final Words Award goes to Justin, who, before he gets an axe in the chest, says he's telling you the truth. We had nothing to do with this. So if you just untie me, I'll leave. I promise I'll never tell anyone I ever even saw you. Just untie me. Axe to the chest.
Mm-hmm.
Boom.
Boom.
Yeah, I don't know if I believe that. Because a few minutes earlier he said, hey, Jin, please untie me so that I can snap her neck.
Snap her neck.
So, I don't know. Maybe
also,
Claire made the right decision.
If that rusty axe didn't instantly kill him, I bet the infection will.
Hey. Frank Lapidus, guess we're not going to Guam Act Break Award. This one goes to Jacob, straight out of Act One, who says, someone's coming to the island. I need you to help them find it. Which, as Joanna alluded to, probably going to be harder now that they don't have a lighthouse, but Jacob says they'll find a way. But someone's coming to the island.
It wasn't that big of a deal to begin with. Don't worry about it, Hurley.
Do you feel like it's okay for me to say the unanimously who the recappers at the time guess that someone might be?
Yes. Sure.
Well, we haven't seen Desmond in a little while, so that was the guess and the hope that it might be Desmond Hume himself.
Is the island done with Desmond? We shall see.
No lighthouse, gonna have to travel by Hume hole.
has he healed up at this point from being shot?
Oh, right. That's right.
Shot right in the milk.
Right in the milk.
There is no official podcast check-in this week. I'm going to provide you a clip the next time we have an audio podcast, but this one's just a video of Emily DeRaven on set showing off her squirrel baby. If you want to check that out, you could.
She thought it was pretty funny, too.
Yeah, you could access them on the the old Lostopedia official Lost podcast portal. And I think that is going to bring us to our break. We'll head to the storm right after this.
Now is the time of the podcast where we like to thank our Small Council subscribers. I think we want to call them candidates now. We've decided to rebrand, though. I don't know. That might be a complicated process. We'll see. But anyway, we would like to thank them. These are our folks who subscribe at the $10 level or above. They get all of the perks, including having their name read out on the podcast. So starting with some newcomers, we've got Peter Henderson, Tobias Wolf, Matt Campbell, Ellen Rabin, Katie Truchon, Liz Roller, Billy Bosky, James Cooper, John Lillistrom, Samantha O'Leary, Brennig Hayden, Luke, Sean Huff, Roberto Alonso Villarreal, Kevin Castello, Patrick Kelly, Angela Travis, Kurt Klein, Matthew Keane, and Karen Frost Arnold. Thank you all so much.
I think you guys would actually want to be candidates instead of small council members, because one of them we can't kill with our little birds. there's a rules about that. I would like to add these people to the safe candidate list. Congratulations, Fanny Martin, Ali Oman, Brad Mashenko, Vanessa Marshall, Addison Lee, Elisa Roof, Jenny Malone, David Woodley, Jackie Burns, Danette, Brittany Cano, Kelly Grady, Patrick Sullivan, Grace Richardson, Joshua Lane, Bethany Townsend, Danielle, Justin Young, Harrison Fox, and John Stahl. You guys are safe.
And I would like to add to the giant wheel in our lighthouse the following fine humans: Aaron Miller, Heather Ogden, Daniel Boltema, Adam Wells, Louise Collins, Michael Filippini, Michael Belitsky, Paul Tyrell, Dre, Sean Stringfield, Warpstone, Derek Bachman, Clark Ainsley, Dimitri Portnoy, Melissa Horsfall, Mariana Cotto, Nate, Robbie Rapass, Emily Relf, and Amy Gomez. Thank you all for allowing us to use mirrors to look into your childhood homes.
That ended somewhere.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we're back for the storm with that laugh. That's just a joyous way to enter the storm. Who?
Pew pew.
Yeah, we're back. Pew. It's a storm.
Try to bring that high energy.
Yeah. What do you have to talk about this week of the storm?
Tick, tick, tick. 7 days until Jack's dead.
We have entered Jack's final week.
It's only going to take 12 more episodes.
Also, his good episode is his last solo episode. Well, there won't be Jack-centric ones going forward, but it is his last solo Jack. Jack party.
There's plenty of Jack to go around in season 6, but yes, that's true. It's technically his final.
And we'll see David again. David gets to meet his Aunt Claire. It's a whole thing. Mm-hmm. David doesn't exist.
And his mom, Ana Lucia, so he could grow up to be cheap.
All right, yeah. So we should say, of course, that we know that Juliet is... Where do you think... What was so all-fired important that Juliet had to go to on the day that her son was auditioning for this prestigious music school?
Some sort of medical conference? Or a vending machine repair conference. That's what Juliet was.
Why was Juliet out of town? I have questions about that.
Out of town completely. She's going in the house.
She's probably a good mom the rest of the time. So, like, what's the big deal?
It's
what's
just
one
the siren
audition?
Song of the vending machine? I just think if your kid's like super nervous to play some Chopin for Damon Lindelof's mom, you got to make sure you're there.
Well, not
him.
Only that, but mm-hmm. he's sworn you to secrecy about the other parents. Yeah, so you know so you that asshole's yeah. not showing up.
You know, bad dad Jack's not showing up. So like good mom Juliet should be there. I don't know.
Anyway, that's fair.
I have some questions. I definitely 1000% thought this was just Sarah. The first time I watched mm-hmm. the show, I didn't even think about it for a second. I was just like, Julie Bowen, obviously, will show up at some point, probably.
Because why wouldn't you? You had Ethan Rahm in every season. Why wouldn't she show up?
Okay, so David is one of my favorite things that happens on the show. I've said this before, I think, in The Storm. This idea of, like, giving Jack a son to father so that he can heal his own daddy issues is brilliant. How does it sit with you in terms of, like, thinking logistically about an afterlife and how, like, a lot of these figures are, like, one-to-one, like, real people. And then there's like, whose kid is David? Like, what is David? Who is he? What is he? Like, you know what I mean?
I mean, I think it goes back to our LAX Storm question, which is who manifested the Dharma Shark? Which I think it had to be Sawyer, because he would be the one who would, like, know about it. But, like, yeah, if you're capable of manifesting the extra thing, you know, that your life is missing, it's very curious that more characters don't do that. Mm-hmm. Like, it seems like Hurley does it, because Hurley's the luckiest guy in the world and seems to be having, like, an okay time with it. And then Jack does it because he, you know, gives himself the son, even though he's a shitty father, he does eventually come around to it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and for John, it's what, Helen, and then what we assume is a good relationship with his father.
Oh, yeah. So why, again, Kate, what's up with your episode?
Think, aim higher, Kate.
Yeah.
Well, aim to be not a murderer, Kate.
Right. I guess Kate's is, at least so far, it's that she escaped the marshal, finally.
She without sure without did. Him dying.
I guess.
I have an answer for what David is, unless, Neil, you have a thought.
I mean, other than that he's Cheech traveling through time, I don't know if I have a good one.
I'm going to go with Jack's inner child.
Oh, you think it's just it's another
sort of bothering
Jack.
Himself.
Just beamed out of his body. Yeah. Bothering himself. Bothering his wounded child within.
A half Jack, would the Dresden mm-hmm. dolls say. Sorry, mm-hmm. that song gets stuck in my head all the time. Interesting. But then, like, why... If you're just going to do that for one character, it begs the question again. Why? Okay,
why Jack? Because he's the main character of the mm-hmm. show.
They absolutely did it for the right character. I'm saying, why not let that way be out of like some other stuff?
I mean, Saeed manifests himself some nephews that I don't think he has elsewhere. So, you know, there's some other Stardust children.
That's a good right. point.
Well, he manifests Nadia even after she was heinously run over by a car.
But I mean, there's plenty of dead people here. Like, it's nothing yeah. but dead people. But I think those kids don't exist elsewhere.
Right, and can't exist because Jack and Juliet are both dead. So
right.
no time in the future would they have a child who could eventually catch up with them and have to live his heaven being his dad, coming to his secret piano, whatever. Yeah, what kind of kid would live that as a heaven anyway? Yeah, you know what, Joanna? I'm 100% with you. That is exactly who it is.
You're so rarely 100% with me. That makes
because
me so happy.
Whose idea of heaven is your dad saying you love you, if not like yours when that's your big wound?
Mm-hmm. I think the casting of Dylan Minnette is so good, too. I think he looks a lot like a little Matthew Fox, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Could turn into a little Matthew Fox.
All right, so Jacob's mission, multi-level mission, but one thing is like to get Jack and Hurley out of the temple. Do you think he already knows that like Hurley is the backup candidate?
I think at this point he wants it to be Hurley, but he knows Jack might throw a Jack and just not choose it.
So Jack is just the like meat in between Hurley's final destiny.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Well, and I think that Jacob can see the writing on the wall literally, for the other characters, right? The other Lossies that are left. So Kate has already been crossed off because she decided to be a mom, I guess.
But intriguingly, not crossed off in the lighthouse. And didn't we think last week that the cave was Smokey's and the lighthouse was Jacob's?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's interesting that they disagree.
The cave was the shared space that Smokey knew about. Like, that was the one he was allowed to access.
Okay. Sure.
Because yeah, I like the idea that they put the... Every time there's been a change, they rebalance the rocks.
But basically, Jacob has not synced his two calendars.
Right,
like,
because Saeed's name is not crossed off. Exactly. And we already know that Saeed has been sort of corrupted and claimed.
Well, Saeed's name would have been crossed off after Jacob was dead.
Yeah. So, and you know, we don't know... We don't even know if Jacob knows which one of the Kwans is the one.
And we never will. So, and we never have an explanation for what this lighthouse is outside of this. So it's like...
Yeah, I think Jacob is just, like, down to, like, his last couple reliable candidates. And, like, you know, I think it's clear that Sawyer isn't going to be the guy, you know? He's got his own problems to deal with. And as Kate explains in this episode, is on his own. I mean, I think it's Jacob just hedging to be like, all right, well... I need somebody to take over the island, and it's going to have to be either Jack or Hurley.
If I were to give Jacob any credit, which I'm inclined to not.
You don't have to.
Right.
Yeah.
He wants Hurley because he recognizes, like the audience does, that this is the guy that you would want to be your island god. Mm-hmm. But it is the fact that he could just jump into Hurley's cab, give him an ankh and a guitar case, and tell him to go back to the mystery death island, and Hurley just does it, that gives him some sort of pause. So that's why he's not going to just make the call.
It's too easy.
It's like Hurley. That is, like, as far as we know, like, Hurley really hasn't been, like, tested by the smoke monster, right? So, because I think, like, if Jacob's bringing candidates and he's not dead, he's either looking for the perfect candidate or just waiting for this loophole to be executed, which seems like a dumb thing given what we learn in the incident is that he's been bringing people here for a long time. So it might have been accelerated by his killing at some point, and the idea of who needs to be the next protector is actually that person needs to fight. The person he was looking to replace for before just kind of needed to, like, protect the light and himself from the smoke monster, other dude's brother. But, like, whoever, now that Jacob's dead and Smokey's ascendant, whoever takes the protector thing has to do what Jack does and actually fight the smoke monster.
So he needs a trial by combat candidate and then the, like...
The one who actually is going to do it.
Right.
And he needs these two specifically to have this lighthouse moment together because he needs Jack to give it to Hurley afterwards. So Hurley needs to be good and pure to Jack, and Jack needs to be, like, smashy and volatile. And then when it really comes time around that campfire to make the choice, Jack needs to step up and make that choice. And I think that's the thing that Jacob can't make him do.
Also, do you think Jacob has decided that Jack is somewhat expendable in this situation? Like, if he's identified that Hurley is sort of the true best person to lead the island going forward, he knows that, like, all right, well, maybe we can convince Jack to fight and then he'll die.
Yeah, I think so. I think you have to die to bring them all back, John, and you have to die to get everybody together in heaven. Jack is as connected as Lost is going to be in terms of getting those two characters on the same death mission.
Here's a mystery that's never solved. Number 108 on the lighthouse wheel is Wallace, which has no, according to Lostpedia, no good answer.
Is it fake Tina Fey's last name? Maybe she's piloting a boat.
Zoe Wallace.
Zoe Wallace.
Maybe. The Lostpedia entry for Wallace is pretty hilarious. First of all, there's, like, the gender on the, like, thumbnail is, like, both genders and a question mark. It's pretty great. So we've got a gender fluid character here. And then there's like a bunch of different bullet points of like what Wallace could be a reference to. But my favorite one is Jorge Garcia played a character called Wallace in the film Deck the Halls. So.
Wow.
We're just swinging for the fences here on Lostpedia. But yeah, it's really annoying that like, so like if it's Wallace, if it's a nobody, it's a nothing, then Jacob's plan the whole time had to be Jack smashes the mirrors, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think
he picked a high number knowing that Hurley would scroll past some stuff that Jack would want to see.
Jack's childhood home.
Yeah,
they picked.
It's like in order to get to 23, you got to go buy 100, or in order to get 108, you got to go buy 23, right?
I mean, that's my favorite saying.
I think they just picked the episode number and then went to lunch, and they were like, "Good, sweet."
They could have put something really fun on there, like what would you have picked to put at 108? That would have been a little bit
Widmore.
More silent. So, yeah, well, interesting.
Paul McCartney,
but not Charles.
Paul McCartney.
Penny.
Just like pick someone, you know, like anyone is better than nothing. The best answer to a mystery is a person, Joanne.
Right. Which is, I think it should have been. I mean, what's Walt's last name? It's Michael Dawes, but I don't remember what Walt's last name is because I think it's his last name.
Lloyd.
I would have put Lloyd. Right. Mm-hmm.
That would have been great.
Put Walt.
Yeah.
Why not?
Or
and
just
then people would have
Vincent.
Been like, Walt's coming to the island and, you know, fine, you know, but it's better than nothing.
Better than right? Wallace. Yeah.
Zoe Wallace.
Does Walt. Isn't that like a is that part of the end?
It's a special feature on the finale DVD.
Right. It's the new man in charge. Yeah. They talk about Walt eventually coming back to the island.
Yeah. So that would have been great.
So yeah. They just, you know, didn't think of it at the time.
Or make it Hume or make it frickin'.
We can't make it Hume because then that tips them in the right direction.
Make it
Nadler.
Well,
everyone knows it's like. Oh, Megan Nadler. Okay.
Yeah.
And Rose is like,
everyone,
no, thank you.
Everyone knows now, but we are in the pre longest night part of Game of Thrones where it's like, well, everyone knows it's not going to be that, right? You know, like that's where we're at. And Lost is just going to thread that a little bit better.
I mean, listen, 109 is friendly, so we could have just moved him up one.
Oh, put a good old Tom on there. Why not?
You know what? I'm going to decide. I don't know if we know what Rose's maiden name is.
Oh,
but I'm going to decide that
Rose
was
Wallace?
Rose's. Yeah.
I've got my. It's Vincent's last name.
Good, Vincent.
Vincent Wallace.
Vincent Wallace. His Australian Kennel Club official registration is the last name. And it's
Maybe it's a Pulp Fiction joke and it's just a MacGuffin, right?
Ooh.
Marcellus Wallace? Mm-hmm.
Marcellus Wallace?
Sure.
Maybe it is Ving Rhames. That would have been
maybe
sweet.
It's Mia Wallace. Maybe it's Uma Thurman. We don't know.
Ooh.
Let's find out.
Right, no. So, Rose's maiden name was Henderson. Damn.
Damn it. All right. So let us talk about a couple things that happen on this little journey through the jungle and what they mean for the end game. Number one, Kate and Jack. Neil, do you have any feelings about what they're setting up here with this Kate and Jack interaction?
I feel like I should know, but I don't. Nothing's coming to mind at this point, other than it's there to obviously signal that Kate is going to go get Claire, which is going to be an important thing very shortly. You know, like that they established the threat of like Claire being like, you know, if what you said about Kate is true, I'm going to kill her. And then also Kate is like, oh, I'm definitely going to go find Claire. So it's setting up sort of future conflict. But honestly, I don't know if I thought about it too much in the context of Jack.
How about you, Dave?
What is it setting up between Jack and Kate? Mm-hmm. Or just why is it there in the episode? Because I think it's in the episode sort of to pad the fact that she goes back to the fucking temple immediately, right? Like, she goes there, and that's the next time when she's with Kate. But
with
I think otherwise... What? What? Yeah?
Did you say with
Was
Claire?
I wrong? Claire, right. Kate and Claire both sort of meet up back in at the temple.
Yeah.
What is it setting up between her and Jack, though? Just sort of like... capping off their relationship side and making it sort of like Claire-centric, Or is it because Jack gets worried because he doesn't know where Kate is at some point in the future? That feels right.
For me, so we only have, like, how many episodes to go? Like,
12?
Something like that? Mm-hmm. The end of the series tries to sell us really hard on the Kate and Jack love story. Like, Kate says goodbye to Jack and she, like, kisses him and she's like, I love you. And he's like, I love you. And then in the sideways, you know, she's not the one who, like, quite wakes him up, but she, like, she's like, I missed you so much. Like, they're really selling Kate and Jack mm-hmm. to us at the end. And so since they've just really been, like, ping-ponging Kate, and we talked about how the Sawyer door gets slammed shut, because as we all know, it's Sawyer and Juliet in the end, right? I think they're just sort of trying to push Kate and Jack
back
together. Look at them. They're just smiling at each other. They smiled at each other when she left the temple. They smile at each other when she almost shot him at the crick. They love each other. Let's get hyped for that in the finale.
They were always meant to be, even though they were terrible co-parents.
So I think that's why that's there. They're like, mm-hmm. oh, we're in the end game now. We got to ramp this up.
I mean, what does it say about this storyline that neither Dave or I could come up with? Oh, right. They're setting up the romance. Because you know what doesn't feel like it matters? The romance.
Totally. Completely. I agree with you.
This other one I know the answer to.
Yeah. All right. Here's the other question, Neil. Why is the cave pit stuff here on their journey through the jungle?
Across the sea.
What? Yeah.
They're setting up the big Allison Janney cameo. Right? Because it's who the Adam and Eve are.
The Titus man. Wilver.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man and, in Black and Allison Janney.
Right. And the mom. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Just.
They.
Just
it's weird. It's it occurred to me when we were doing our live watch of the last episode that's the only reason that Child Jacob shows up, like why they use Child Jacob to show the man in black, is because, one, they have to lay this groundwork for Across the Sea so it doesn't feel like completely out of left field, but two, it's so you can't have every episode hinging around Jacob popping up and providing the motivator for somebody to, like, keep going, which is literally what's happening, is Jacob just pops up and moves, like, here's another rule, and then, like, just flits off, and it's softened a bit when you don't know that's baby Jacob, but man, when you know it's baby Jacob and it's, like, every other episode, you're seeing a ghost Jacob, it's like, good God, guys. Couldn't God have not explained it to us? But
it's,
you know,
the Jacob season.
Yeah, we'll get to season. across the sea and debate what happens there.
It is kind of fun though, because Hurley lampshades this, like, big fan theory that, like, the people in the cave, like Jeff Jensen at this point, though I'm surprised that he hadn't seen, like, the finale or whatever, but Jeff Jensen at this point, it was still like, okay, I see what they're doing, which is shooting our favorite. It's like when it's like in Game of Thrones when the Hound got up and, like, peed into that river and it felt like they were peeing on Lady Stoneheart.
Yeah.
This feels like, okay, a long-held pet theory is that the two bodies in the cave are actually, like, Rose and Bernard or someone else from the Lost Ways camp, like, due to time travel, and for Hurley to sort of, like, jokingly say it, they're like, well, guess it's not.
Would have been fucked up if that was Rose and Bernard and that's the only time they referenced it. Like, Rose and Bernard just never came back for season 6. It's like, oh, they were the skeletons. Didn't you
and
guys?
And Hurley's like, what's this little dog skeleton here next to
them? Oh.
Vincent died a very old age, happy, contented, good boy life.
I think sure. In the grand theory of the time that they kept saying, which is that they knew the last shot of Lost when, you know, they were planning the final season, which is, of course, the eye. I gotta assume that Vincent's also there from, like, the very beginning, where it's like, mm-hmm. we're gonna do a mirror, he's gonna be back in the bamboo forest, the dog's gonna be there, there's gonna do an eye. So I gotta hope that they'd never thought about killing off poor Vincent. It's like, you don't kill the dog.
Yeah, obviously.
Fools.
fools. All right, I think that's all I have. I mean, is there anything else we feel like we want to say?
The thing I said off pod and then last week was, do we know which one is Laquan, if he, you know, has been watching people since birth? But it turns out that when we scroll past Laquan in the lighthouse, it's the place they got married, which is super confusing because I could still apply to both of them. But also, Jacob was actually there, so why would he be watching a moment he was there at? I'm so, was he just watching the place
again,
eventually get married?
I think this is just like, it's like discovering someone's open browser tabs that they left open before they went on a trip. Jacob was like, all right, well, I gotta go see the Quans now.
He's like, Travelocity, get me to this pagoda.
Quan, it's at some number that I made up. That degrees.
Yeah, it's tough. It's really the sun and jinn of it all is tough. You know, they should both have been candidates. They both should make it through the end of the series, but, you know, it is what it is.
It is what it is. So I guess you'd think with a name like Sundown, we'd be seeing Sun next week. But Neil, what are we doing next week?
Oh, we're going to go and visit with Saeed. And also, you know, shout out to the Hulu screenshots, the little thumbnails, big Nadia spoiler right there. I was watching the episode, this episode to you know, obviously get prepared. And when my Hulu, when I hit the menu button and it went back, it was like, there's Nadia's face, like right there.
You're like, be better. Be better, Hulu. Like,
yeah, you could have just, I mean, it's not a spoiler to say it's a Saeed episode.
At least they didn't put because Kimi's in this episode, right?
Yeah.
So at
Kimi.
Least they kept Kimi out of it. Kimi mm-hmm. makes good eggs. He's coming back. Yep. I don't remember. I think we're going to save Mikhail for Mikhail's working with Kimi, but I think we save Mikhail for the Sun.
He doesn't.
Episode.
Yeah, he doesn't show up until
he puts
the Sun
Jin in the freezer.
Mm-hmm. But Jin, mm-hmm. but we get Jin in the freezer in this episode. Right. Saeed is like, what's that noise? Anyway, spoilers for Sundown.
Good thing you're in the store. While people are here who are very familiar with where and what we do, where can people find more of us that aren't, isn't about Lost around the internet? Let's start with Joanna Robinson.
Oh, so we wrapped up Mare of Easttown on the Still Watching podcast. Great, good fun was had by all. And we are already sliding on over to Loki. So it is Loki time on the Still Watching podcast. We've got an episode out, if this drops on Saturday, a couple days ago, our preview episode came out with head writer Michael Waldron and a bunch of information that you want to know about Loki that Dave edited for us beautifully. So on the Still Watching feed. So that's what I'm doing in there. Or you can find me, I don't know, writing about Mythic Quest and other things that I'm watching over on VanityFair.com. I talked to Oscar winner F. Murray Abraham this morning on the phone in my car. And then last Friday on Zoom, when I talked to F. Murray Abraham, he showed me his Oscar and it has outfits. His Oscar has little outfits. It's so exciting. Anyway, yeah, so that's what I'm working on. How about you guys?
I run an Etsy store that makes outfits for Oscars and surprisingly it does it very well.
In one neighborhood.
Neil, where can people find more Neil?
Well, you know, you can find me over at filmschoolrejects.com doing this and that, and on Twitter at Rejects, mostly just tweeting about how much I hate moving. Although we are through the point of moving, I guess you could say through the Hume hole.
Yeah.
To the point where everything is moved. It's just about organizing and decorating the new place, which I think is the best part. Dave and I were commiserating over setting up an office, like setting up your workspace, is a really nice sort of cathartic thing. So that's what I've been doing. And you can follow me on the Twitter and maybe I'll post some pictures as the progress happens. It's going to be fun.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can follow me on Twitter at DA7E. You can also listen to me on the Fighting in the War Room podcast, where we talk about pop culture. I think it's Mare of Easttown this week. Anyway, things are happening. Movies are coming back, so that podcast is going to be picking up, telling you what to watch, except next week I think we're watching Flight of the Navigator, because I got to choose, and why not?
Ooh, fun.
Why not fun. See some young Sarah Jessica Parker and some alien time travel stuff? But most importantly, if you don't want to go out and find those other things, you could come back here next Saturday for another edition of The Storm, and me telling you like I'm telling you right now, to not fall down.